I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beaten Track podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode, it's Wendy James. I got to sit down and chat with Wendy James, and as I expected, it was going to be a fascinating chat. I mean, I'm not going to tell you too much about it, but, you know, it involves buying socks with George Harrison. Let me just give you that much of a heads up as to what to expect. It involves Clash gigs. So much amazing stuff in this episode. I can't wait for you to hear it. Before I get on with the episode, I just want to say thanks to 76 for producing this podcast. Thanks and much love to Scroobius Pip and everybody at the Distraction Pieces Network. And also, if this is your first time listening to Off the Beaten Track, when you're done with this episode, why not go and have a rummage in the archives, because you'll find over 150 episodes with some amazing musicians, producers, comedians, actors, DJs. Go and have a look, because there's loads of great chats to be listened to. And if you really like it and you want to support it, then I also have a Patreon page where I put a standalone episode up each week over there, as well as kind of mixtapes and all sorts of stuff. That's patreon.com/offthebeatentrack. I mean, you can find out everything off thebeatentrackpodcast.com. Okay, let's get back to today's episode. Please enjoy Off the Beaten Track podcast with the wonderful Wendy James. I've got an announcement. Save Our Souls Clothing. www.sosclothing.co.uk. Why am I telling you this? Because they're our official sponsor. Yeah, that's right. Go and check them out, because their clothing is off the scale. You're going to love it. So they've decided they want to be our sponsor, which is amazing. And what I have to do is I have to tell you about why they're amazing. So here's a little bit of blurb. So they've only been going a year, and they're based in Southend-on-Sea, just up the road from me. They put the company together based on a love of tattoos and alternative music, and they've worked with some of the greatest artists around the world to produce these items of clothing that are as unique as you lot. All the designs are printed using biodegradable, sustainable and water-based inks. And in addition to that, they only print on garments made by members of Fair Wear Foundation. I mean, come on, great clothing and a conscience. Since going live in April last year, they've seen their audience grow massively and are now selling orders all across the world. And they were recognised by Cosmopolitan magazine as one of the best sustainable clothing brands, alongside names such as Stella McCartney. I mean, that's quite a first year, right? So go and check them out, because they've put a lot of love into supporting this podcast, and I couldn't be happier. What else they've done is they've given you 15% off. So if you head over to www.sosclothing.co.uk, do a bit of shopping, see what you like, throw it in the basket, and then on the way out, put in the discount code BEAT15, BEAT15, and that'll save you 15% off. Amazing, right? www.sosclothing.co.uk. Official sponsors of Off the Beaten Track podcast. Let's get back to that podcast. It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network with me, Stu Whiffin. Right, we're recording. Joining me today over Zoom is Wendy James. Hello.
Hi there, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. We've established before I press record that I'm sitting in Essex. Whereabouts are you?
I'm down in the south of France, which is where I luckily managed to get to as America was closing down its airports. As you know, as coronavirus, because typically I live in New York, but I think it's turned out quite a good decision to not go through the virus lockdown in New York, but rather in the countryside of the south of France.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, that's a lovely place to be.
I mean, New York appears to be recovering, but I still think it's been safer here up in some mountain fresh air.
Yeah, I'm sure. That sounds lovely. We've just literally just seen the Prime Minister talk a load of garbled nonsense this afternoon in the UK, and it would appear that the lockdown is loosening quite greatly now. So hopefully there'll be some kind of safe normality resuming very soon.
Are you noticing people using masks and so on?
Yeah, do you know what? I went to the dentist this afternoon, which was very, very strange. And yeah, literally having to wear a mask until right at the last minute, and then having a woman who literally, the dentist was dressed like a deep sea diver, kind of rummaging around in my mouth, was quite strange. But yeah, it's everybody seems to be sort of behaving really. It's been okay so far, and I think everybody's just, I think having the sunshine's really helped, Wendy. I think that's been a big thing, just having, you know, the sunshine. And I think if it was just chucking it down with rain throughout that last few months, I think it would have been a far different story.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're lucky, as much as you can call it luck, that this whole pandemic happened in the summer months, at least for the Western Hemisphere.
Completely.
Yeah, getting locked down in miserable snow, cold, rain would be a bit grim.
So how have you found it as a creative, Wendy? Is it? I mean, it strikes me that this has happened sort of slap bang in the middle of like the promotion for the new record. Am I right?
Well, it's actually been conversely really good for me, because obviously there was a large pre-order campaign for Queen High Street. Mm-hmm. And so when people start, some of the deliveries were a little bit late because of the delayed postal service. But as people started receiving their albums, instead of having to rush off to work and maybe listen to it in bits and pieces, I've actually observed that a lot of people had time on their hands to actually sit down and listen to it. And also their focus perhaps isn't as scattered as it is when we're all running around the city or our jobs or whatever, that they could actually engage and, you know, take part on the different social media sites that I have and offer up their opinion. Enough, so much so that, you know, because there are 20 tracks on this album, so, and everyone, of course, comes back with their different favourites. Mm. And I just decided, well, let's actually, because there are so many songs on this album, I want to release multiple singles from it. Streaming first, radio, and then there'll be a 7-inch box set later on in the year.
Oh, nice.
And so I decided for the next single, which is currently now going up to radio, I would set up a poll on my website for my fans to choose what they think, you know, maybe they've got the golden touch, what they think are the two, you know, surefire choices to be a double A-side. And so they chose "Kill Some Time Blues" and "Marlene and Fleur," which and the artwork's all done and everything, and it's going up to radio now because there are just so many. I have a personal favourite, and that's actually going to be the next single.
Right.
But this one is the people's choice.
That's a great idea, though. Putting it, I mean, and it's a really good way to engage with your fan base as well, isn't it? Giving them the kind of influence to sort of put forward the choices, what they think should be, you know, are the standout singles. I think that's a great idea.
I think so. And also it's a good way to, because there are 20 songs, you actually have to listen to all of them in order to make your decision which ones you like the most. And you have to hear it a few times. But that hasn't been a problem with this album, because I think it takes an hour and 20 minutes to get through. And I think, you know, it really is a glorious mix of music. That I think people have just been enjoying the experience, which is kind of different to snatches of pop song that come and go really quickly in the digital streaming age. This is the absolute opposite.
this is. I mean, this is something that I'm going to touch on when I ask for the first track from your playlist today. This is something I always ask musicians as well. So, let's start the playlist, Wendy. So, for track one, I'm going to ask you what you regard is the song with the greatest ever intro.
And I've thought about this, and actually, it strikes me I should just say my songs for everything. I wouldn't be lying either. I wanted to flip your script slightly.
Because okay.
The first thought I had when I read the question was, you go to Led Zeppelin and When the Levee Breaks and that drum beat. But I want to volunteer my favourite outro. And if I may, and that is Derek and the Dominoes, Layla, outro, which is the famous music used in Goodfellas when he's trying to escape the helicopter flying overhead.
Yeah.
And it's actually influenced one of the songs on this album, track 11. So may I offer you my favourite outro instead?
I'm loving it. I'm loving that. You're going to go for an outro. And I'll tell you what, I mean, the intro.
It's actually called Derek and the Dominoes Piano Outro or Piano Exit.
Yeah.
And we've all seen Goodfellas. It's when Ray Liotta's getting really paranoid because the cops are closing in on him to bust him, right?
It's an incredible scene as well. He's a neurotic, sweaty mess at that point, isn't he? And it's like
looking up at the helicopter through his windshield and with just Derek and the Dominoes blasting over. And Martin Scorsese, he's such a good director anyway with editing music to movies.
Yeah.
Always uses the Rolling Stones.
Gimme Shelter's in that as well, isn't it? He uses Gimme Shelter in Goodfellas, I think.
You could probably put money on Gimme Shelter being in every Scorsese movie. Maybe not Age of Innocence, but all of his mobster and gangster and criminal records.
Yeah.
Even King of Comedy.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to Wikipedia how many times he's used Gimme Shelter, actually.
Yeah.
I think he even talks about it, that it's his go-to song. But anyway, he uses Derek and the Dominoes for that exit and he keeps it going for the whole length, cutting the footage in and out. And it's just so great. And when I was looking at it again on YouTube, I saw that Guns N' Roses covered it as well.
Oh, really?
I knew that they did Live and Let Die, but they also had a go at Layla Piano Exit. Anyway, all of your listeners will know, and if they don't know, then they certainly should go and find Derek and the Dominoes.
Well, there's a Spotify playlist does accompany every episode, so people can go and have a listen as well.
Ah, right. Oh, perfect. Of course. Yes, yes.
I mean, what's brilliant is you've gone for an outro, which is you're the first to do that. But you've actually gone from you've actually picked an outro from a song that's arguably got one of the greatest intros as well.
That's true, isn't it?
Yes. Few people have chosen Layla as their choice for this track. But the thing I was going to say, Wendy, was when you were talking about how people listen to music now and it is so fast tracked and, you know, with streaming services, it is constantly, you know, being nudged to, you might like this, you might like this. Was that a conscious decision that you made when you put the new album out to release it as a body of work to like, right, listen, this has got to be listened to as a whole rather than, like, I don't want you going on iTunes and cherry picking a couple of records. This is a piece of, you know, a piece of art that I want to be listened to in its entirety.
I mean, of course, people can just listen to 30-second clips if they wish.
Hmm.
But for the music lover, rather than just the music consumer.
Yeah.
It was written from an artistic point of view that, yes, I set out without doubt to write 20 songs because in my mind I had a very simple plan, which was based on how much music you can get onto one side of vinyl. It's about 20 to 22 minutes.
Yeah.
Before the audio starts breaking up. And so... I just thought, well, I'll put five tracks. I wanted to have a double vinyl because Exile on Main Street is my king of double vinyls. And I just wanted that in my repertoire, you know, when I look back at all the stuff I've achieved, I want a double vinyl in there as well. Gatefold, Presentation. And I just figured, well, it's really simple, nice, geometric math, put five tracks aside, and you got 20 tracks. So then I sat down and I started writing 20 songs. And when I'd written the 20th one, I stopped.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, I want to go back, Wendy, and for track two, I want to ask you what the first song was you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you.
Okay, well, I've got a good story for you with this.
Okay.
My choice is George Harrison's Something.
Oh, lovely.
And the first time I heard this song was because there was a local boy. I can't even remember his name. But he was smitten with me, and he bought me the 7-inch single of George Harrison. I think maybe it's the first time someone of the opposite gender found me attractive, to my knowledge.
Okay.
And so he bought me the 7-inch single of George Harrison, Something, and he said, this will explain to you how I feel about you.
How old was you then?
I don't know, 15, 14.
Okay.
Isn't that sweet?
So what was that emotion then?
the pretty chuffed that someone found me attractive.
Yeah.
But that was usurped by just the thought process that had gone into his gesture. You know, he didn't just say, I fancy you.
Yeah.
He had gone to the record store and picked out a record that represented lyrics that he thought he wanted to, you know, communicate to me. And of course it is a stunningly beautiful song.
Mm.
And that touched me forever. And then I have to tell you, this is my funny name-checking anecdote attachment to this story. Years, 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 years later, I was in London and I had a boyfriend. And I was buying him socks, right, in Harvey Nichols. And I thought I'd buy him a nice pair of socks in Harvey Nichols. Really romantic. A little bit of history about Transvision Vamp. Sometimes the press were a little bit mean to me.
Yeah.
And so I was buying my boyfriend a pair of socks and I felt a tap on my shoulder and I swung around and it was George Harrison.
Wow.
And he said to me, I just wanted to tell you there's something really special about you and never give up.
Fucking hell.
Right? And I was like, oh, thank you. And just realized I was in the middle of buying socks. But, and then that just, I've got, and there's so many things about George Harrison that I absolutely love, including his big benefit gigs for the Dalai Lama, wasn't it?
Yep. I mean, without a shadow of a doubt, always the coolest Beatle, by a mile, the coolest Beatle. And I mean, to get tapped on the shoulder by a Beatle and then get told that by a Beatle, I mean, that ticks a few boxes, Wendy.
It does. And at a time when, and obviously he was relating, as musicians do.
Sure.
To, you know, because even the Beatles, if you went back and probably looked at some of the scrutiny and ridiculousness that was written about them in the tabloids and so on. Any musician who's achieved a certain level of notoriety or fame has been attacked by the British press at some point or other.
Yeah.
And so regardless of, you know, even if you don't like their music, you sympathise with what it feels like to be under the gun.
Completely.
But it turns out that George Harrison thought I was quite good as well, so... And then that flooded back memories, long forgotten, of that first little 7-inch single from my young admirer.
That's superb. I think you've answered that better than anyone, that question, Wendy.
I think.
Okay, so let's go back to them. Let's stay in them sort of formative years, and I want to know for track three, what song reminds you of your time at school?
Hands down, no question. The soundtrack to Grease.
Wonderful.
I started off like Sandy and Sandy the good girls, and I really wanted to be bad Olivia. You know, there's good Olivia and there's bad Olivia. Once she's got on her spandex pants and her shades and her leather jacket and her, you know, high heels, and she's putting her cigarette out on the ground, and Kinnicky's falling on his floor on his knees, and John Travolta's mind is blown because it used to be good Sandy and now it's bad Sandy. And so for me and all of my girlfriends, we would sing Hopelessly Devoted along with Good Sandy, and then You're the One That I Want with Bad Sandy.
Yeah.
But also all of the songs, God, I can't remember, you know, just so yes, my answer is the soundtrack to Grease. And also the look. I just think it's a, God, they got it right. You know, as far as musicals go, they got it really right.
It's perfect. It's so perfect. And the actual song, Grease by Frankie Valli, has got one of the greatest intros ever as well. Just that ba ba da 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 da. It's just brilliant. It's just a massive call of arms, and what a way to start a film.
Yeah, and Frankie Valli is just genius anyway. Just genius. And on my last album, one previous to this, Lenny Kaye, the guitarist from the Patti Smith group, played guitar on it. But he's also an author. He journalist for Cream magazine in the US, and also quite often in Rolling Stone magazine, and he's written books, and one of the books he obsesses over is he wrote about crooners in the 50s.
Yeah.
And his super top favorite is Frankie Valli, and so any given weekend during that period of time, if you'd say to Lenny, do you want to come out for a beer or something, he would be out in the sticks of New Jersey or I don't know, Idaho, just following Frankie Valli around.
Wonderful.
And Frankie Valli was still out there gigging, you know, and genius.
I think Frankie Valli played the Albert Hall in January this year.
Yeah.
He's still just, I mean, he's got to be, I don't know what age he is now. He's got to be mid-70s now, but he was still knocking it out of the park. His voice was just absolutely incredible.
Insane. And on some of the songs on this new album, you know, they're highly Motown inspired, or that kind of 60s pop beat.
Yeah.
And Begging by Frankie Valli is, you know, super top favourite. If I hear that anywhere, I have to start dancing.
Yeah, it's so infectious, absolutely. And the thing is, it's not just the songs that he sang, it's like the songs that, you know, that other people made huge successes off the back of, you know, like things I never, like, it took me years to realize that he wrote things like Sun Ain't Gonna Shine Anymore and things like that. You just think, I always just thought that was the Walker Brothers, and it's like, no, Frankie Valli wrote that. It's like, my God,
he's a bit of a king.
Yeah, just a bit. So whereabouts was, where was school, Wendy?
Oh, but so if you're going to play the soundtrack, which Grease cuts are you going to choose?
Well, you can choose. I mean, I do like a little bit of Hopelessly Devoted to You, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, entirely up to you, and it'll be a surprise for me.
All right, okay. That's in my capables. All right. So how was school, and where was school?
School was down on the south coast of England. And how was it? I was a good girl. I was like Good Sandy. I was a good girl. I studied. I was fairly capable in my classes. I learned lots of instruments. I learned clarinet and piano, and I briefly got put through flute and violin as well. Singing in the choir, I sang. My first public performance was actually, there's a famous opera house near to where the school was called Glyndebourne. And my school had one of the few opportunities to send up its best singers to audition to be in the chorus, in the child singers for whichever operas they were playing in that season.
Yeah.
And I actually won the child set and won. I beat out all the competitors to do just the one sentence solo in Act Two of La Boheme by Puccini. And David Hockney did the set designs, and I think it was Sir Peter Hall was the director. And, it's a privately owned opera house, and serves for England as the kind of a summer season of the Royal Opera House. And I was paid £3 a night and a Mars bar every night. And so at the end of that season, I'd saved up enough money to buy my first pair of Levi's and get my ears pierced.
Oh, so Bad Sandy was on the horizon then.
Bad Sandy was on her way. And then shortly after that, I went to it. There was a pivotal moment in my life. And that is someone said, do you want to come see The Clash play at Brighton Centre? And I must have been 14 years old, maybe coming on 15. And, maybe I went with the guy who gave me the record. I didn't think so, though. I'd remember that. But anyway, so I did go in underage to see The Clash play, and it was when they were on doing Combat Rock.
Wow.
And just seeing Joe with his mohawk and just the power and dynamism of, I guess they were really riding a wave right then. They were just, they were such a well-oiled machine at that point. So I saw The Clash play, and that was really when Bad Sandy was awoken. Let's not call her Sandy. Bad Wendy was awoken. there's so many tributaries of stories that come off that, because in Mick ended up being my boyfriend for a very long time. Mm. But of course, that evening in the Brighton Centre, no one had any idea that our paths were going to cross like that. What was memorable about that evening is that I managed to squeeze my way right to the front and onto the crash barrier, and thinking, you know, I can handle this. But a Clash audience was fairly rambunctious.
Yeah.
Towards the crash barrier, and I actually started getting my lungs caved in from everyone pushing up against me, and this massive black guy called Ray Jordan, who was their famous roadie, he came and hoiked me over the top and took me off to the side of the stage. And then years later, it's insane, but well, no, it's actually only 2 years later, but I'd met Mick and Joe and everyone, and I was in London, and Ray Jordan was there one evening, and he went, "Are you the girl I pulled over the crash barrier?"
No way. Said,
yeah, Ray, that was me.
That's incredible.
There's even more. It's just crazy that night, because Mick walked out on stage that night, and unbeknownst to him, I was in the audience, and I'd represent many years of his life, unbeknownst to him. But also, ahead of me in head of the order of what happened in Mick's life was his first wife was also there that night, and that's the first night she met him.
Wow.
But she met him that night, and they got together because she was that little bit much older than me, and represents, you know, a whole swath of time in Mick's life. And then the next one was in the audience as well, which was me. So poor Mick, when he walked out on stage, he had no idea that the next 20 years of his life were in the audience.
Right there in front of him. Brilliant.
So
at that age, Wendy, did you want to be a performer? Did you want to be a singer?
I was definitely showing music as my my avenue, but up until seeing The Clash and understanding punk music and getting Nevermind the Bollocks and seeing Debbie Harry, up until that point, which is punk, right, or new wave, I suppose I was just getting channeled into piano playing and, you know, just being a good singer, but I don't know how that would have found its outlet. But I was nudging myself, and, you know, of course, you know, I was beckoned into rock and roll for a reason, and that's where I was meant to be, wasn't it?
That was your calling, definitely. Hello, I've interrupted the podcast again, haven't I? Sorry, it won't take a sec. All I want to say is, the songs that we're talking about in this podcast, if we can't play them, it's just because of the regulations regarding playing licensed music and such. So if you want to hear the songs, just go over to Spotify and search Off the Beat and Track podcast, and you can listen to all the songs, because I've put playlists up for each of these. If you can't find it on there, I'll send links on all the social media accompanying each episode. So you've just got to press that one button and you can go through and you can enjoy all the songs that our guest picks. Anyway, I'll shut up, get back to the podcast.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
See you on the other side. Okay, so for track four, I'm going to ask you what the first record was you remember buying from a record store.
Well, are you still there? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you still hear me? You just froze for a little while.
Yeah.
Okay. Blondie, Parallel Lines.
Oh, that'd do it.
And I never had male pinups. Oh, it says my internet. Are you still there?
Yep, yep.
Hello?
Hello.
Okay, good. Yeah, Blondie. I never had male pinups per se, but when I saw Debbie Harry, just like the rest of the world, I don't think I'd ever seen anything so beautiful in my life. And then the sound of Blondie's pop songs, which are more based on the 50s tunes that they grew up with, but with a punk twist. You know, just perfect pop songs. And then she was divine, wasn't she, in her little shorts and pretty much like Bad Sandy, actually, that same look as Olivia. Maybe they were influenced by Blondie when they styled Olivia.
It wouldn't surprise me. And the thing was, it was like there was lots of pop stars that were really pretty then that I'm sure everybody sort of absolutely adored. But none of them were cool. Debbie Harry was fucking cool.
Wasn't she? There are various clips. That's the great thing about YouTube. There was a cable, you know, at that time, America was the only country in the world that had so many free cable, free per view, whatever, pay-per-view, I don't know.
Yeah.
Access to cable channels in New York City anyway. And there was this real scruffy program called TV Party, and there's Clip and Debbie Harry and Chris Stein, and of course all the new Patti Smith and all that lot, all the CBGB lot.
Yeah,
they're all going on this show, which was just real low rent rock and roll show, but brilliant. In fact, Mick did it. There's a whole clip where Debbie's on there showing people how to pogo.
Really?
It's great, and she says, "Well, you know, we're all called," well, I won't do an American accent, "we're all called punks." And she said, "And this is the dance." And they hand her a pogo stick and she shows you, you know, the good old American actual pogo toy from whence the name of the dance comes.
Amazing. So did you ever get to meet Debbie Harry?
Yes. I cannot claim to be friends with her, although I might be next year, but I can't reveal why that might be.
Okay.
But I have been in the same room as her and said hello to her, yes.
Wonderful.
And I have many two of my best friends in life are Chris and Tina from the Talking Heads, and one of their greatest friends is Debbie, so you know that she's only one connection away from me.
Perfect. Okay, so as we move forward, I'm going to get into clubbing, and for track five, the song that soundtracked your year's clubbing.
Okay, well, I've got a two-part answer to that.
Okay.
Because, I mean, if we're actually talking about my youth, then clubbing would be like a converging exactly with the two-tone revolution.
Oh, right, okay.
Well, you know, the Selector Specials beat and yep. Jamaican ska. And also growing up to some extent in Ladbroke Grove, also, of course, you know, just West Indian reggae and the sound systems of Ladbroke Grove. But if I was going to clubbing in terms of as a schoolgirl, then it would be Dancing to the Beat or Dancing to the Specials, Ghost Town. But then getting slightly older and really clubbing, then I would say Underworld's Born Slippy and Prodigy's Firestarter and Smack My Bitch Up and proper really good rave music.
It's been chosen a few times, Born Slippy, and it's no surprise because just again the intro to that, just them sort of delayed I don't know if they're strings or what they are, them sort of synthy sort of delayed sounds. It's just before the beat even starts, everybody's hands go up. It's just a beautiful, beautiful start to a record.
It's genius, but I also think that about the intros to Firestarter and Smack My Bitch Up as well. You know, Prodigy really delivered some killer songs.
They're still, Wendy, without a shadow of a doubt, the greatest live band I've ever seen. Them and Depeche Mode are Essex's hometown heroes. And the Prodigy come back to Chelmsford and played the V Festival, and I think in 98, I think, or 97, when that album, Fat of the Land, had just exploded everywhere. And to see them come back to Essex, and I'd never seen electronic music
so exciting
and so hard and so fucking rock and roll as well. It was like
it's really sexily aggressive.
Yeah,
it's so aggressive, and you just want to lose yourself
completely. And God knows how many thousands of people in that field did. And it was just the most intense. And I've seen, you know, from seeing Sonic Youth to the heaviest of guitar bands, Prodigy were heavier. And, you know, it was just crazy. It was like electronic music had just gone to a completely new level. And with every kind of punk ethic that the Clash had, that the Specials had, that mindset and that manifests in, you know, in lots of that kind of DIY electronic music that the rave scene and the
fact that someone along the line had discovered sub bass.
Yeah,
and that, you know, that, and I must say, in a different scheme of genre of music, but still the same ethos. Well, I went to Jay-Z's New York gig for the Black Album.
Yeah,
and that, you know, and also Beyonce guested with Crazy in Love on that show. And that was at Madison Square Gardens.
How was that?
And Jay-Z brought it with as much punk attitude as, you know. So that's when you realise that punk is more than just, you know, a couple of blokes with spiky hair.
It's an attitude, isn't it? It's an
attitude, yeah. Mm,
totally. Okay, track 6, Wendy. A favourite song from an artist from your home county?
Oh, county. I thought you said country.
You won't be the first, Wendy. Don't worry. You can have country.
Oh, county. Oh, that's me. I'm better than anyone from there. I was going to say Let It Loose, any track from Exile on Main Street. I really read it as country.
That's fine. So you're going to go with the Stones?
No doubt. Absolutely. I want that to be part of... I've put down Let It Loose or Happy.
Mm.
But I also love Ventilated Blues. I love all of it, but I would do Let It Loose.
Nice.
Exile on Main Street.
So at what age did you move from the South Coast up to London then?
I was in London by 16, and I'd been going up and down a little bit. But, you know, I sped up quite quickly once I'd turned into Bad Wendy.
So at 16...
I was going out clubbing in London down on the King's Road to... There was a club called Crazy Larry's where, you know, young, pretty girls would go and get a little bit off their heads. And so I was doing that. And there are various other clubs, and I was running around Portobello Road. And, you know, because all of this fits in before Transvision Vamp's even a thing.
Yeah. So So what music was happening then when you were 16 around London then? What year would that have been like, and what was going on sort of musically?
Well, I guess being in Ladbroke Grove, still the overpowering influence of The Clash was still there.
Sure.
I can't actually remember back. I mean, we're talking about the early 80s, yeah. Early and mid 80s. So I wasn't really paying attention to music, maybe hip hop.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course. Hip hop would have been exploding then, wouldn't it?
But Nick Say and myself from Transvision Vamp, we were training ourselves or focusing ourselves on music that had come before, which was the Velvet Underground and Mark Bolan and the Stooges and even girl groups, yeah, like the Ronettes and so on. So I can't remember particularly paying attention to music of the time, because we were then by then speeding up into creating our own music, and our own music was based more on Blondie and Bolan and this kind of stuff. But in terms of what was going on in the background, then I think, yeah, you'd have an East Coast revival of hip-hop, wouldn't you?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So just to sort of touch on that period of...
Because I always gravitate to New York for my sounds, kind of that new wave, choppy post-punk sound that bands had in New York after punk.
Yeah. And it would have been the kind of early days of like The Cure and things like that as well, I would have thought.
I remember Killing an Arab. Do you remember Killing an Arab?
Oh, what a record that is.
Sorry, I just drank something. Yeah, really great.
And so, as you said, you were sort of forming, you know, your own band. Like, in the kind of mid-80s, it was a very, very kind of saturated pop environment. How did you... kind of was it tough to kind of, and did you feel the pressure on you as the front person of the band to kind of step out of, you know, a market that was saturated in pop, to come through with guitars and a guitar band fronted by a woman, which was, you know, was back then was quite rare.
Rare, but I mean I did have predecessors, of course.
Of course.
Tenders and Blondie, and then right back through to Janis Joplin and, you know, Grace Slick. There have always been really, in fact, more amazing women in the past.
Yeah.
That was the music we were into. So there was no question of contriving this. On the other hand, I think that is what enabled us to cut through.
Yeah.
Because we straddled pop sensibility, just as Blondie had done, in fact.
Yeah.
Pop sensibility, but with rock and roll underpinnings and punk persuasions.
Yeah.
So we were in that. I mean, given context, what was around? Tears for Fears. Everybody wants to.
Yeah.
Is it Run the World or Rule the World?
Bit of both, I think.
And just real heavily saturated super pop and 80s and Wall Street and money, money, money and. When was ABBA? Was that the 80s or is that the 70s?
ABBA kind of wound up in about 82, I think.
All right. And then Wham, would that have been mid-80s?
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, obviously it was present in my life, but it was not a focus.
And so with that kind of punk attitude, you know, and the predecessors that you'd mentioned there, how did you find... What for me as a fan of music seemed like literally overnight success, and you was on the front page of, you know, from smash hits to the Enemy to sounds and whatever. Like, how did you deal with that kind of, you know, it probably wasn't instant. And as you said, you've been putting that together for a long time. But in regards to sort of, you know, commercial success, it seemed like it was like, wow, this band. How did you deal with that?
It was relatively quick compared to most bands that do at least two or three tours of the UK in their transit van, kind of growing an audience.
Yeah.
And we did cut through, in as much that by the time we got off our first UK tour and ended up playing the Marquee in London, I Want Your Love was at number five, and the queues around Wardour Street were massive to get into an oversold out gig. So that trajectory is quite rapid compared to other bands.
Yeah.
But then, of course, just because you've sold out, so at that point we know we're on a, the big difference that probably it's hard to even fathom now is Top of the Pops and getting playlisted on Radio 1, because this is all before internet, right? It's all before cable. So, and Top of the Pops was a meeting place for all generations to sit down 7 o'clock on a Thursday and see who's Top of the Pops.
Yeah.
And pretty much at that time, if you broke into a Radio 1 playlist, which meant you were on regular rotation on the big shows on Radio 1, or Top of the Pops, and obviously then both, then you were pretty much, unless your song was a real stinker, you're pretty much guaranteed to start going up in the charts, because it was just such a massive audience.
So,
and overnight exposure, like to go from, that, you know, we're creeping up at number 58 in the charts, then number 40, then top 30, and then it starts accelerating and accelerating. But of course, but that's not really, I never was into the idea of fame to make me feel loved. Like I didn't need, I didn't need to be famous to justify my existence. And so when front covers and all of this stuff started coming at me, I viewed them more as interesting achievements, but they didn't go to my head or anything.
Because taking nothing away from the other members of the band, you know, there was so much attention on you, and I just want to talk about Top of the Pops as well there for a minute, because you touched on something that a few people that have been on this podcast have touched on, which is, you know, how it was such a, you know, a thing in this country that you sat down and you watched Top of the Pops, because you didn't have music television. That was all you had. So that would literally be, you know, that moment where you'd get your half hour Top of the Pops. That's where you would get to see what your pop stars look like. And so when
there grew then the antidote to Top of the Pops, which was the Tube.
The Tube, obviously, yeah.
And wasn't Paula Yates fabulous?
Oh, just beyond cool. Cool. But what I want to know is, Wendy, is like, when you actually got on Top of the Pops, was it what you expected it to be? And was you aware on your first performance that, right, there's a big audience here? Because for me, I watched that and you own that.
Yes.
And like, and was that something that you just thought, well, where's this band going? I don't know. I've got to give it 110% because I'm on Top of the Pops. Like, yes. What's your perception of that?
But I mean, I still have that same attitude. If we're on a bill with other bands, I'm a tiny bit competitive. I like to go out and win, you know.
Sure.
And so I know that, and I've said this to people that are acting as pluggers for me, if you get me onto Saturday Night Live or if you get me onto Jules Holland, and I'm given 4 minutes to win you over and prove it, I can step up to that plate. I'm not afraid to do it. And yes, you can. I mean, I enjoyed the performance anyway, so I'm in my element on Top of the Pops. But I also know, okay, find your cameras and fucking own it.
Brilliant. And so, just to go back to the initial question, was when that kind of, you know, celebrity, for want of a better description, that celebrity was thrust upon you. Did you cope with it okay?
Yeah, I did, because, again, like I said, touched on it, that stuff didn't really, it's not like I started travelling around with an entourage.
Yeah.
And I didn't, although you get famous, you don't automatically get rich.
Yeah.
So no, I wasn't swanning around in Rolls Royces. I was living on Portobello Road and still catching the Tube.
It's weird, isn't it? Because that perception is that, oh, they're on, you know, that, oh, she's on Top of the Pops. She must be a multimillionaire now.
It doesn't happen that quickly. Yeah. And, of course, everyone takes their bite of the money train before your artist receives any. But and so my actual life, which I have explained to other people, there was a pub on Portobello Road called the Warwick Castle, which was pretty much the epicentre of where everyone was, where Joe and Paul from The Clash went, where all the local, from, you know, from Hoi Polloi to Scumbags, everyone congregated in, not Scumbags, but renegades, whatever, just regular people, working people, and a few smart dropouts.
Yeah,
everyone, which Ladbroke Grove is famous for, they all congregated at the Warwick Castle, and So my life and my circle of friends actually didn't change. Life changes as you move into it, and they're like, you know, people grow older, they have kids, split off into couples and all of this stuff. But in those early days, we were all still footloose and fancy free and just drinking in the pub. And there's so many, or not so many, but quite a lot of famous or successful people around West London that it's not like a novel sighting.
Yeah.
See someone, oh, there's Mick Jagger, or, because it happens around there.
Yeah.
And
that in itself will keep you grounded to a degree then, won't it?
And you just realise that there has to be a place on the planet where these people can actually live and go shopping and meet their friends without the hullabaloo of the fame machine.
Yeah.
And so that little 1 square mile of West London, it was actually very, very grounding.
Yeah. Okay. So for your last song, Wendy, you get to play DJ, and I'm going to ask you for a song that many may not know that you would like them to hear.
Okay, well, I'm volunteering a band up to you that many people should know called Sonic's Rendezvous Band. Have you heard of them?
I haven't, Wendy.
Well, you've heard of MC5, right?
Of course.
Well, and have you heard of Fred Sonic Smith, who's one of the guitarists?
Yep.
So after MC5 split up, there's a short, and the Stooges had split up by then, and they're all from Ann Arbor, Michigan. Fred Sonic Smith, who's a genius songwriter and guitarist, one of the greatest, in my opinion. He's obviously RIP now for a long time. But anyway, he formed a short-lived band called Sonic's Rendezvous Band after Fred Sonic Smith. And also on drums is Scott Rock Ashton, the drummer from the Stooges, one of the Ashton brothers.
Wow.
And a couple of other guys. And let's say they enjoyed their drugs to the point that they never really last. Sonic's Rendezvous Band didn't last that long.
Yeah.
Maybe a year and a half. And they made it into the recording studio. Or I can't say it was drugs. How do I know?
Yeah.
But their album's called Too Much Crank. But anyway. anyway, I digress. The point is they went into the studio just merely once. And they only recorded one single song called City Slang. But you can find so much of them now, thanks to modern technology, because they played in many, 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 many gigs. They were a gigging band around their area. And everyone went nuts for them. And there are so many floating bootleg tapes around the planet of Sonic's Rendezvous Band. And various little record labels over the years have made compilations of all the bootlegs, the best songs from all the bootlegs.
Yeah.
And my personal favorite is a compilation album called Too Much Crank. And I'm going to so when I recorded the last album, James Williamson from the Stooges worked with me, and James Sclavounos from Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds is and was my drummer then. And James Sclavounos and I flew to Berkeley, California, San Francisco, and met up with James Williamson, and we recorded two cover versions. And one was Bob Dylan's It's All Right, Ma, I'm Only Bleeding, which was an epic task, or an epic song to take on. And the other one was Sonic's Rendezvous Band, You're So Great. And because when I first heard them, and this is what I bonded with Lenny Kaye over, was our mutual love of Fred Sonic Smith, who, by the way, happened to marry Patti Smith. And it was Lenny that introduced them. But anyway, our mutual, like, oh God, I love Fred Sonic Smith. So yeah, me too, me too. And of course, Lenny knew him and was they were all around at that time. But anyway, so when I first heard You're So Great, I knew that I'm not really a cover person, but if I was going to do a couple of covers, You're So Great would be one of them. So we did that. But actually, for the purpose of this podcast, I'm going to volunteer a song called The Clock with No Hands. It's a long one. I think it goes on for about 8 minutes, so be careful of your timing.
Okay.
But, the oozing filth dripping off of Fred Sonic Smith's guitar and voice, the leering, the massive drumming by Scott Ashton. It's just, I love it so much. So, and I recommend to your listeners to just go on YouTube and, you know, type in Sonic's Rendezvous Band, because they're one of the great, great unknown bands.
Wonderful. What a recommendation. So as we're coming out of lockdown and you know, normality doesn't seem too far off, Wendy, what's coming up for you? What's happening?
Well, I think gigs are still not going to be operational for a little while. What do you think?
I own a venue and yeah, I'm seeing nothing. It's in the UK, the Prime Minister literally today has just said about pubs and restaurants, but yeah, no news on clubs.
So. I was talking to the head of a massive promotion company yesterday called AEG, mm-hmm. and they've just pulled everything until next year.
Yeah,
and they're basically talking about resuming business March, April.
Wow.
And a couple of the venues that I know that I'm meant to be playing, they've already said they're going to stay closed until the end of November. Mm. So I just think, because my tour was meant to happen in May to coincide with the album release.
Yeah.
And it's currently delayed until September, but we're having to take a real serious look at that now. And I know a fact that there's a rugby scrum going on between all bands rescheduling all their tours once again into 2021.
Yeah. So this is a UK tour we're talking about, Wendy.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of gigging coming up for me next year. But yeah. At the moment, I'm presuming to be out on the road in September, but by the time your podcast comes out, that may have been delayed.
Okay. Well,
other than that, I'm a bit concerned to do international travel at the moment, but I was thinking sometime in July I might, you know, start expanding my horizons again. I am getting a bit, you know, it's all very nice being in the countryside, but I'm getting a bit, you know, stir crazy. I would like to run around a city a little bit.
Yeah, I'm feeling that as well. I'm not too far from London, and I'm thinking about it next week, just jumping on the train and going and just having a walk around London. I've just missed it. It's very strange times. So what I'll do, Wendy, as well, is where everybody's listening to this podcast from, in the bio that surrounds it, I'll ensure the links there so people can go and have a listen and also purchase your album.
Please, yes. I mean, there's an iPlayer on the Queen High Street page of my website, thewendyjames.com. You can buy all the music on thewendyjames.com/store. And there's a SoundCloud link as well, if you just prefer to listen to the songs on SoundCloud. And of course, it's on Spotify. You can probably link to the Spotify page.
I will put all of these links on there. And when this comes out, are you happy if I tag you in it on the social medias as well?
Please, yes. I will share you to everyone.
Wonderful. Wendy, thank you so much for your time today. It's been an absolute joy.
Oh, thank you very, very much.
There you go. Told you that was going to be a great listen. Just amazing. What a absolute force of nature Wendy James was and is. Great chat. Thank you so much for Wendy for giving up her time. Thanks to you lot for listening. Really appreciate your ongoing support. As mentioned at the beginning, go and have a look in the archives if you've only listened to a couple of episodes of this podcast, because you'll find some crackers there. There's some amazing chats there to be listened to. And if you're all up to date and you still want more, then why not go and have a look and support the podcast over on Patreon. You can find out about all of that at offthebeatentrackpodcast.com. I'll be back next week. Thanks ever so much for listening. Thanks once more to Wendy, and much love to you lot for listening. See you soon. Bye-bye. Oh, yeah. Sorry. I've butted in yet again. I just want to quickly tell you about this magazine. It's called Pod Bible. Now, Pod Bible is the new essential guide to podcasts. It's put together alongside Spotify and Acast, and it's a one-stop shop to tell you all about the podcasts you maybe know about, but definitely about a load of the podcasts that you probably don't know about that we think you should know about. I mean, in the first edition, there's interviews with Adam Buxton, interviews with Craig Parkinson, there's features on Jade Adams, and there's just an abundance of information about so many exciting podcasts that are out there. Also, Spotify have given us these amazing little codes. So if you do get a print copy, you can just turn on your Spotify on your phone, scan the little code, and it just automatically opens up the podcast on your listening device. How good's that? If you haven't managed to get a print copy, then just go over to www.podbiblemag.com and read it online, because the digital version is all over there and it's all free. So every other month there'll be a new edition out. So go and have a look and support us on the social medias as well. Podbiblemag.com. It's Off the Beaten Track Podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.